This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. military planners continue to back President Donald Trump's calls to protect oil fields in Syria, both from the Islamic State terror group and other potential adversaries, and are preparing to send more equipment to make that happen. A defense official said late Thursday the U.S. was working to reinforce the position of U.S. troops still in Syria, in coordination with the Syrian Democratic Force partners in northeast Syria. The official said that the effort would include sending additional military assets to the region. The United Nations said Thursday that almost 180,000 people had been displaced since the start of the Turkish incursion into Syria. Ursula Mueller, the Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, told the UN Security Council in New York that nearly 80,000 children are about or among those who fled south from the border areas between Turkey and Syria.
The United Nations remain deeply concerned about the prospects of further hostilities along the Turkish-Syrian border and the impact on civilians, including further displacements.
All sides have said that they are abiding by a ceasefire as they implement the Russian-Turkish agreement that divides up the border region. The Trump administration has invited the foreign ministers of Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan to Washington to discuss a giant hydropower dam project on Ethiopia's Blue Nile. It's the focus of an escalating feud between Addis Ababa and Cairo over water resources. Egypt, which has long sought outside help to mediate those talks, has accepted the meeting. It is scheduled to be held at Steve Mnuchin's office on November 6th. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. One of President Trump's key allies in the Senate, South Carolina's Lindsey Graham, has introduced a resolution to condemn House Democrats for the impeachment proceedings against the president. Graham said 41 Republican members of the Senate are co-sponsors of his bill. The South Carolina senator said the current proceedings are a danger to the presidency.
We believe that a lot of people want to get Trump, and they don't give a damn about how they get him. I'm not telling you what he did or didn't do. I'm telling you what they're doing in the House is dangerous to the country.
The resolution calls on the House to hold and vote to open an official impeachment inquiry. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said such a vote is not necessary under the Constitution and House rules. The impeachment inquiry centers on Mr. Trump's decision to withhold $391 million in military aid to Ukraine for several months. This is while he and some aides are alleged to have pushed Kiev to open investigations to benefit him politically. It is against U.S. law to solicit help from foreign governments to interfere in a U.S. election. Joshua Wong, the 23-year-old poster boy for Hong Kong's ongoing anti-government protests, said Thursday that he's the only candidate for upcoming district elections who's been barred from running. He was defiant as he parked himself in front of the city's legislative council complex to announce that he is the only one of 1,000 people running for the 479-seat district council who has yet to be approved. British police have confirmed that 39 people found dead in a container truck were Chinese. As Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA, early indications suggest the involvement of a people smuggling gang.
The bodies were found in the back of a refrigerated container truck at an industrial estate east of London in the early hours of Wednesday morning. Police say 31 of the victims were men and 8 were women. The driver has been arrested on suspicion of murder. He's been named locally as 25-year-old Mo Robinson from Northern Ireland. Reports indicate the container was a sealed, refrigerated unit. The vehicle had travelled by ferry across the English Channel from Zeebrugge in Belgium to Purfleet on the River Thames. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Two top U.S. senators are asking intelligence officials to investigate Chinese-owned TikTok, the hugely popular computer app, believing it to be a potential national security risk. TikTok allows users to post short videos and share them online with other users. Its servers are based in the U.S. and other countries where it's available, but it is owned by a Beijing-based company, ByteDance. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 25th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Thousands protest in Guinea as the opposition responds to ECOWAS's call for dialogue.
We are in this fight because we want the president to respect our constitution. So he has to come up with an official statement saying that he has abandoned any step of changing the constitution to seek for a total.
Fayemi Limuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. The UN House in Nigeria reopens 8 years after a suicide bomb attack. African migrants evacuated from Libya tell horror stories in Rwanda. Egypt and Ethiopia follow a diplomatic route over Nile River water sharing. And SADC countries will today, Friday, simultaneously demand an end to Western sanctions on Zimbabwe.
The 25th was decided by SADC heads of states when they met in August. That is, indeed, it has taken so long for this sanction to be lifted.
Stergomena Lawrence Tax is the SADC executive secretary, and a campaign is launched to clean up Senegal's capital. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Thousands of Guineans turned out on Thursday in perhaps the largest protest against President Alpha Condé's alleged effort to seek a third term. President Condé's spokesman, Amara Sampare, told VOA that the opposition's claim of a suspected third-term project does not exist. Meanwhile, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has called for dialogue between the government and the opposition. ECOWAS says the escalation of tension could impact the entire West Africa region. Fayemi Limuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party. He says any dialogue should be conditioned on the release of all the 18 opposition leaders and a proclamation by President Condé denouncing any alleged attempt to seek a third term.
We were able to mobilize over 1 million people here in Conakry. People are very, very motivated, especially youth, because they are the victim of all those things we're talking about. The message was sent clearly to the president that we are no longer going to accept any change of the constitution for somebody to stay on power more than 2 terms. It went very well, and people are very well motivated to respond to any call made by FNDC.
How true is it the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has asked you and the government to dialogue? Are you ready to dialogue with the government?
The ECOWAS leaders have sent a statement calling for dialogue. And I should say that all the leaders of the ECOWAS organization are fully involved in what is going on in Guinea. The current president of ECOWAS, who is the president of Niger, is leading the fight against any change of the constitution in Africa to allow somebody to stay in power until he dies. So they call upon everybody for dialogue. But at this time, there are at least 2 conditions that need to be fulfilled for us to sit down and talk. We have many of our leaders in jail because of the demonstration last week. Those people need to be out of jail. That's one of the conditions. The second condition, we are in this fight because we want the president to respect our constitution. So he has to come up with an official statement saying that he abandoned any project of changing the constitution to seek for a third term. We are fighting to have this country to be a country of freedom. The international community has to remember, Guinea went through that in the past. In the years of 2000, Lansana Conte, old and very sick, who don't understand anything, but people around him pushed him to change the constitution in 2001 to have a third term. That led the country to a bankrupt. About 600 young people were killed because of the economic and social crisis that the country went through. We are not going to go back to that. And that's why everybody is ready to continue that fight until we make Alpha Condé understand that he has to respect our constitution. Otherwise, he's going to be removed, as it happened in Burkina Faso, as it happened in Sudan, as it happened in Egypt, as it happened in many other countries.
Does that mean that the opposition is going to continue to hold protests?
Of course. We have already said clearly that next Wednesday we will be demonstrating also in Conakry and in all main cities around the country.
Fayemi Limuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Nigerian authorities commemorated United Nations Day on Thursday with the official reopening of the UN building in Abuja. The building had been closed since a deadly Boko Haram suicide attack in 2011. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The event Thursday opened with renditions of Nigeria's national anthem and the UN anthem played by Nigeria's National Assembly Guards Brigade. Then, the reconstructed UN building in Abuja officially reopened 8 years after a Boko Haram suicide bomber drove his car into the building and set off a bomb. Mark Lowcock is UN Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs.
The opening of UN House today is an act of defiance against such terror. We stand together to say that we will not be cowed by violence. We will continue to support the Nigerian people, fulfill their dreams of a future of prosperity and security.
23 people, including UN workers, guards and visitors, were killed in the 2011 blast. More than 60 others were injured. Edward Callon, the UN representative to Nigeria, recalls the tragic experience.
What started as a normal working day at the UN House on Friday, 26th of August, 2011, quickly turned into a disaster to the United Nations staff, families and some of our partners. It was indeed a dark day for the United Nations.
After the attack, Nigerian authorities vowed to reconstruct the building, and in 2012, the government approved $15 million for the project. Former Foreign Affairs Minister Joy Ogu says the United Nations and Nigeria remain committed partners.
I want to express again my appreciation to the resident coordinator, Mr. Edward Callum, and the entire UN staff for their resilience in upholding the highest tradition of the United Nations in spite of the enormous challenge that they have faced. The reopening of the rebuilt and refurnished UN House in Abuja is a great testament to Nigeria's unflinching commitment.
Nigeria became a United Nations member in 1960, 8 days after its independence from Britain. The decade-long Boko Haram insurgency in Nigeria has left more than 7 million people in need of assistance. UN agencies are currently helping an estimated 3.8 million in the northeastern states of Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The Southern African Development Community, or SADC, will today, Friday, jointly call for the lifting of Western sanctions on Zimbabwe, which it says have had an adverse impact on the country's economy. All 16 SADC member countries are expected to individually call for the lifting of the sanctions today, Friday, based on the commitment they made during their August summit in Tanzania. Gift Dube of View Zimbabwe Service reports.
Addressing reporters in Gaborone recently, SADC Executive Secretary Dr. Stekomena Lawrence Tex explained the decision.
The 25th was decided by SADC heads of states when they met in August. That is, indeed, it has taken so long for this sanction to continue being in place and to be lifted.
The countries are echoing Zimbabwe's claim that targeted sanctions imposed by the United States, the United Kingdom, the European Union, Australia and others over allegations of human rights abuses, rigged elections and forceful takeover of land from white farmers are hurting the economy. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa made this point at the 74th session of the United Nations General Assembly in New York.
These sanctions constitute a denial of the human rights of the people of Zimbabwe to develop and improvement of their quality of life. Furthermore, the sanctions are slowing down our progress, inhibiting our economic recovery, and punishing the poorest and most vulnerable in our society.
Uploading Satiki's support in calling for the lifting of the sanctions, Mnangagwa demanded the immediate lifting of what he termed illegal sanctions.
Those that imposed illegal sanctions must heed this call and lift them now.
The U.S. has two sets of sanctions on Zimbabwe. United States Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, Matthew Harrington, explains.
The two categories of sanctions. One is the Zadera, which has not really taken effect yet, because Zadera refers to debt relief and new lending. And for that to happen, there need to be certain conditions met. There's a second category of targeted sanctions, financial sanctions, focused on individuals that have been determined over the years to have played a negative role in the undermining of democratic institutions and processes.
Harrington said Zimbabwe can only expect better relations with the U.S., including the lifting of sanctions, if the country addresses issues of human rights, corruption, and economic mismanagement. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, I am Kip Stube.
Today is Friday, October 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. African migrants evacuated from Libyan detention centers to Rwanda say they still want to make the dangerous journey to Europe despite the abuse they encountered in Libya. The 189 migrants, mostly Eritreans, but also Somalis, Ethiopians, and Sudanese, were brought to Rwanda after a September agreement with the African Union. Rod Elmendor talked to some of the evacuees and has this report from Gashora, Rwanda.
We are near the lake at the Gashora transit camp in Rwanda with 37-year-old Eritrean Ganet Nagash. She's dressed in black and her eyes look swollen because of crying. Nagash says she paid a people smuggler $5,500 to get her to a better life in Europe. But once in a boat on the Mediterranean Sea, her journey came to a horrific end. She says that her boat capsized and that they were captured by the Libyan Coast Guard. They told her that she was in a United Nations camp, but it appeared to be a detention center. Nagash can't tell what happened to her there, but she says it's grim. Off camera, many of the women at the Gashora camp say Libyan guards beat and raped them. Now evacuated to a Rwandan transit center, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, provides the migrants with housing and food. There are brick houses in the camp, and migrants sit quietly in front of them on the red soil. Nagash suddenly bursts out crying and bends on her knees because of trauma, says Elise Villa-Shalane of the UNHCR.
A healing process doesn't happen overnight, and this is why we have specialized psychologists but also protection officers who are here to work with them and accompany them on that journey.
Nagash and other refugees say they are thankful to Rwanda for helping bring them to safety. Abdul Abbas is from Somalia. He came here with his wife and a three-month-old daughter who was born in detention in Libya. He says he's happy.
Because I'm standing and the place safe, and I have health and I have everything. I'm very happy.
Rwanda recently agreed to temporarily take in 500 migrants who were kept in Libyan detention centers. The UNHCR says Libya still holds another 5,000 African migrants in the overcrowded centers where they face abuse. Despite the risk, many, like Nagash, still want to flee Africa. She says that Europe is where she and the other refugees want to go. She says they don't want to stay in Rwanda. For now, these refugees are safe and have time to consider their next move for a better future. Ruth Almendorp for VOA News, Gashora, Rwanda.
Both Egypt and Ethiopia are working to find a diplomatic solution to the conflict over water sharing as construction of the Renaissance Dam on the River Nile nears completion. The leaders of both countries were expected to discuss their differences on Thursday at an African summit in the Russian resort town of Sochi. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Water flows over the two-thirds completed Renaissance Dam on the Blue Nile downstream in Ethiopia. Fears have arisen in both Egypt and Sudan that the process of filling the reservoir behind the dam will severely curtail water supplies, prompting a flurry of bellicose rhetoric and intense diplomatic activity. Recent comments by Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed that he could muster an army of 1 million men to defend the dam if it were threatened prompted an angry reaction from Egyptian officials. But Ahmed, who recently won the Nobel Peace Prize, emphasized that diplomacy is his preferred course of action. He says that if any one of those involved in the talks fails in forging a diplomatic solution, it will be a failure for all. Ahmed also told the Ethiopian parliament that no matter what the opposition to the dam, ostensibly from Egypt, there was no going back on the decision to build it. The comment sparked an angry reaction from the head of the Egyptian parliament's Defense and Security Committee, General Mamdouh Mokhaled, who told journalists if Ethiopia shuts the water tap on Egypt, that he would authorize President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to declare war on Addis Ababa. President Sisi himself told journalists a little over a week ago that he has become frustrated that diplomatic talks between Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan are getting nowhere, and that time is running out. He says that technical committees need to decide how much water Egypt is able to do without in order to fill the reservoir of the dam and how many years the process will take. Until now, he complains, they have not been able to reach an agreement over this. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
A Dakar Clean City Creative Campaign was launched this week, engaging the help of musicians and cultural actors to help clean up the city and fight pollution. Stefan Senghor, a member of the collective, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the new initiative and why it is needed in the Senegalese capital.
Basically, it's about cleanliness of Dakar. The idea is to have the actors from the cultural scene to be part of the initiative and use culture and different expressions of culture like arts, music, theater, and bring all this to the service of building a resilient Dakar and a clean Dakar.
What are the issues that Dakar is facing that make this urgent initiative?
As you may know, Dakar is a city that is taking 557 square kilometers and taking over around 3.5 million people in the same city. So it's a small spot, heavily populated. Therefore, we have a problem in Dakar when it comes to cleanliness and pollution. In a few years that we are all noticing that Dakar is a dirty city, the new mayor making a clean Dakar one of her main projects. One of the initiatives that was put forward is to be able to bring the culture and the artistic movement to the service of building a cleaner Dakar. Dakar Villeplage itself is not going to be only cultural events. There's a few cleanups that are programmed in the different areas, but also measures that prevent pollution in the sense that it is clear to us that if we want to succeed, we need to be able to change the behaviors at everybody's level. Like everybody's an actor because everybody's a polluter. So the idea is to really change the mindset, showcase how important it is today to better manage our waste, also take care of the environment. That gives us everything.
What kind of things need to happen at the bigger levels of government?
From my experience, we have to go towards a circular economy because so far we've been practicing a linear economy that creates so much pollution and so much waste that today it's unbearable. At the end of the day, it's important that we think about redesigning completely the systems of production and consumption at the consumption level too. It is important that people make better choices.
Stefan Senghor is a member of the Dakar Clean City Initiative. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the Senegalese capital. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Ghana, where six candidates will battle it out for the position of the president of the Ghana Football Association, scheduled to hold later today. Friday's presidential elections will complete over a year under the FIFA CAF Ghanaian government's normalization of the nation's football association following a corruption and match-fixing scandal in June 2018. Those contesting include former GFA Vice President George Afriya, Fred Papo, legal practitioners Amanda Clinton and George Ankoma Mensah, Dreams FC Executive Chairman Kurt Okraku, and Far Rangers FC President Nanayo Amponza. Some football fans in Ghana have been speaking on the expectations of the new FA president.
Look at the history of our football. We need people that can come and then implement strategies or measures that can revive our football to the extent that we would like to go back to stadium and watch as we used to do back at early 90s.
So if I'm to ask whom to vote for, I'll vote for George Afriya.
I think we should put women inside. Why? Because women normally prove us surprise.
In East Africa, Kenyan lawmakers have described the country's sports ministry as a cartel. They've also have accused top officials of the sports ministry for failing to support sportsmen participating in international matches. Sports Cabinet Secretary Amina Mohammed and Sports Principal Secretary Kirimi Kabira appeared before the National Assembly Sports Committee, where they were tongue-lashed by the lawmakers. Dan Wanyama is a former volleyballer and now a member of parliament who sits on the Sports Committee in parliament.
That Ministry of Sports is just a cartel. You must be aware. And it is a cartel of swindling public money. You are good at going to other countries to see these championships going on. Instead of you putting up stadiums here for us to bid for the same champions, and it will actually add more value. And I want to say this without any fear of contradiction, that the head of cartels in your ministry is your PS.
Staying with football news, the Teranga Lions of Senegal maintained their number one spot on the African continent in the September war rankings released by football war governing body FIFA on Thursday. Senegal sits in the 20th spot in the world, but remains the highest ranked African team, followed by Tunisia in 29th place, Nigeria in the 35th place, Algeria in the 38th place, while Morocco occupies the 42nd place, while Egypt wraps up the top five on the continent at number 49. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Thousands of Guineans turned out on Thursday in perhaps the largest protest against President Alpha Condé's alleged effort to seek a third term. President Condé's spokesman, Amara Sampare, told VOA that the opposition's claim of a suspected third term project does not exist. Meanwhile, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has called for dialogue between the government and the opposition. ECOWAS says the escalation of tension could impact the entire West Africa region. Faya Milimunu, the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party, says any dialogue should be conditioned on the release of all detained opposition leaders and a proclamation by President Condé denouncing any alleged attempt to seek a third term. And the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, will today, Friday, jointly call for the lifting of Western sanctions on Zimbabwe. That is it for this Friday, October 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
The first ever Russia-Africa summit in Sochi marks a new era of economic, military, and political engagement between Russia and the continent. We'll take a closer look on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.